The Secretariat is last again as they move into the first turn. They're into the turn, and Coley Taj has it by two lengths. Torsion second by a length, and then Sham third. Sham under an easy hold right now. But here comes Secretariat. He's moving fast, and he's going to the outside. He's going for the lead, and it's right now he's looking for it. Ronnie Turcotte sends him alongside Coley Taj.
We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's off to the races. Here's Nick Hahn.
We got the bugles blowing this morning on Off to the Races. Thanks for spending your Saturday Preakness morning with us on Off to the Races. And we have a really full show. You heard there in the opening, 50 years ago today, Secretariat wins the Preakness. Everybody remembers the big win that he had at Belmont Park, winning by 31 lengths at Belmont Park to capture the first Triple Crown in 25 years. Almost equally impressive was his win in the Preakness, where he made a move on the first turn. By the time he turned for home, the race was nearly over, facing his nemesis Sham, who was a good horse most years. Sham is horse of the year. He just happened to face Secretariat in 1973. On today's show, we'll have Daryl Wood here in just a few moments to recap the Shenandoah Downs meet, an exceptional meet. And talk a little bit about how, where you can wager on the Preakness and events in Virginia. Joshua Cabell Langsome will join us. He is the grandson of Cab Calloway. You heard in the opening, the King of Scat introduced Secretariat, and he was a horse racing aficionado for sure. And we'll find out so much more about Cab Calloway. Just kind of started with a little itch, trying to find some music for Preakness Day a couple years ago. And the more I kept researching Cab Calloway, the more I found out how much he was just a big fan of racing. There's a feature today on theracingbiz.com about Cab Calloway and his connections to Baltimore and the Preakness. Frank Vespi will be at Pimlico, and we'll have a live report. I'm in Baltimore, but Frank will actually be at Pimlico. Great day yesterday of racing. The Black Eyed Susan was run. We'll recap that in a moment. And, of course, Derby Bill will have his horse-by-horse analysis of the seven-horse field. They had a scratch yesterday with First Mission being scratched out of the race, developed an issue with, I want to say, his left hind foot that will prevent him from running in the Preakness. So the field down to seven in the Preakness. It is led by the only Kentucky Derby starter, and of course its winner to be in the Preakness. That's Mage, and Mage has just been bouncing to and from the track all week here at Pimlico. Let's go back to yesterday and recap the Black Eyed Susan Stakes. I tell you, it was a tough day for me yesterday until very late in the card. And part of the reversal of my fortune yesterday was cornered with the Black Eyed Susan Stakes. Bob Baffert brought in Phasia, who was the favorite in the race, went off at 3-5 in this field of nine. Also in the field were two beautiful gray roan colts, and Hoosier Filly almost looks like copper or something. I mean, she just has a beautiful coat. The Black Eyed Susan, of course, for three-year-olds going nine furlongs, a mile and an eighth on the dirt for three-year-old fillies. Taxed was also in this race. We had Sacred Wish in this race, Comparative. We're going to get NBC. Larry Colmiss to call the Black Eyed Susan yesterday.
As they make their way to the top of the stretch here, the Black Eyed Susan, and they're into the stretch. And Hoosier Philly has opened up 2.5. On the outside, Texas into second. Fighter has brought back to third. Texas coming now, rushing up on the outside. And it is Texas right up the outside of Hoosier Philly. And Texas and Rafael Bejarano have taken the lead, and they are pulling away at a huge price, 11-1.
Yeah, nice price, $24 for the win there, 11-1. Text just followed Phasia around, got a perfect trip, just ran almost in a bubble completely around the racetrack. Even when the horse was in company, nobody wanted to get around this horse, get anywhere near this horse. Rafael Bejarano with the win. Randy Morse, the winning trainer. And congratulations to those connections there with the win by Text, who is owned by Richard Baldy. Just a nice score, paid well on the double, paid well on the exacta, and really just bailed me out yesterday as just couldn't cash any big tickets until the Black Eyed Susan. A great running of the Black Eyed Susan, well-run race up here at Pimlico on a beautiful day of racing. There will be a threat of weather today during the running of the Preakness. Right now it's overcast in Baltimore. No showers this morning as were forecasted, but on the weather maps that they have shown, you just see a front coming through, and unfortunately it is basically timed to arrive about 7:01, which is the listed start time for the Preakness Stakes. So we'll keep a close eye on that, and hopefully it's not significant to the race. Of course, the Preakness has been running the rain several times before. Coming up here on Wednesday morning, seeing Mage come to and from the track. Got here early for Mage. He was actually here Sunday and has just really been roaming around. He's actually stalled, as they historically do in the stakes barn, in the stall that Secretariat was in. That's a stall that's reserved. A little bit different at Pimlico, as all the stakes horses for the Preakness are stalled together, not in individual trainers. Shed rows, which is a little bit of a twist. Obviously, if it's in the trainer's interest and the horse's interest to be stabled with his group, they'll do that. It's not mandatory, but tradition keeps all of the stakes horses together, and it's just a great venue for at least that. The facility, the plan itself, lots will be made about the elevator, I'm sure, when we talk with Derby Bill a little bit later. But want to reach out here for our first guest of the show, our leadoff man, Daryl Wood, on Off to the Races, and let's get him woken up here with a little bit of his favorite music. This is Carbon Leaf. When you hear Carbon Leaf, when you hear the leaf, the wood is right around the corner. And Daryl Wood now joins us on Off to the Races. Daryl, just great atmosphere at Shenandoah Downs and Woodstock this whole spring. Really a meet to build on. Great atmosphere. I liked the Mother's Day touch last week with the flowers. Wasn't a whole lot being provided to all the moms that arrived, but they really appreciated the effort, and the meet was really great. Happy Preakness morning, Daryl.
Yeah, happy Preakness, Dick, and I thought today might have been a mandatory Bruno Mars playlist on your show, but nice that you were to break away from that the Preakness headliner later.
Yeah, a little bit different twist with that, too. He's actually, the stage is in a different location than it historically is. It's actually on the turn for home, and they're playing later, playing at 8 o'clock, so little bit of a different twist for the Preakness. They'll have other bands throughout the day. Actually, my son Jake is coming up to see his first Preakness ever. So coming up from Alexandria. So yeah, it'll be quite the adventure for him and for those coming to the Preakness. Well, let's recap a little bit this meet at Shenandoah Downs. Thanks, by the way, for the opportunity of calling the second race on Sunday. Eyesight needs to be worked on. I'll eat a few more carrots in the off season, maybe get ready for the fall. But just a great venue, great atmosphere. It really seems to be welcome there.
Yeah, it is. It was the first spring meet, so there was a little bit of unease about weather, about horse flesh, about crowd participation, but it worked out pretty good. We found this, the weather up there is a little bit uneven in spring, so we started out with some rain and some heavy wind conditions there, but really settled in nicely. A lot of the Virginia trainers have two-year-olds that compete in breeders' races, and in spring, the two-year-olds just aren't ready yet come early April. So we were a little bit concerned about support from the horsemen, but we had about 12, 13, 14 new stables that came to Virginia for the first time and competed, so that was quite welcome. Field size was strong, and by the time the weather settled in early May, things really turned out nicely. So we're quite happy, and as a matter of fact, came up with dates for next spring's meet, and we're going to be able to start April 6th and continue through Derby and Preakness Day next year. So the meet went well enough that we're gung-ho about next year and actually expanding a bit. So very good. Very good news.
And next fall, this fall, I should say, you start off with the Shenandoah County Fair, but then you don't have to wait all the way till next spring for a live racing return to the harness track at Shenandoah.
Yeah, no, good point, Nick. We're not even halfway through. We've got a week of fair racing late August, and then we go into another seven-week section, or block, rather, of racing from September 16th through the end of October. So harnesses, we talk about thoroughbreds growth here with the big purse money and the going 9 weeks this year and lots more in the foreseeable future. But harness has gone quite rapidly from 5 weeks just 2 years ago to 14 weeks this year. So the historic horse racing terminals are doing what they're supposed to be doing at the Rosie sites around the state. They're providing more purse money, more racing opportunities, and the increase in agribusiness. So it's firing on all cylinders right now in the state.
Want to talk a little bit about the Preakness today? What sort of events, where can people wager on the Preakness? It's a big Triple Crown day. 7:01 is the post time, NBC covering throughout the day. Tell us a little bit about the where you can wager and watch the Preakness today.
Well, sure, yeah. Fans can wager, obviously, at any of the six Rosies gaming emporiums in the state. Each one of those has got a simulcast area, so you can watch and wager inside all the Rosies sites. We've got OTBs at in Henrico at Breakers, in Chesapeake at Bucket's Bar and Grill. Obviously, the online partners, TVG, ExpressBet, TwinSpires, and Naira Bet. So a dozen different ways that you can watch and wager the Preakness, and it's the best time of year, and then who knows, maybe in a few weeks we'll be talking about a Triple Crown hopeful on this 50th anniversary of Secretariat's dominant run in the Triple Crown.
Speaking of Secretariat, that statue, I got a chance. I've been chasing it. I'm pretty slow on the basketball court, and there's some sort of joke there about not being able to catch a statue, even though it is Secretariat. But boy, that thing was blocking out the sun on the backstretch and here at Pimlico. That is when people finally see it, when it comes this summer to Colonial Downs, and I know people got to see it in Ashland where it debuted in Virginia, but that is an impressive work of art. You really need to come see it when it comes to Colonial this summer.
Yeah, it's amazing. We had it up in Woodstock last week before it left for the Preakness, and it was the talk of the whole Shenandoah Valley. I mean, it just when you see it in person, it's stunning. And just from Facebook friends I've got that have gone to Pimlico yesterday and this morning, and that are taking pictures of themselves with the statue, it just resonates with people. When they see it, it's bigger than life, and just the detail is fantastic.
Boy, Ron Turcotte looks like he weighs 250 pounds on that statue. He's just such a big. It's like 15 feet tall. It's huge. I don't know how tall it is, but it is huge. Daryl, yeah. Thanks a lot for the update, and looking forward to the rest of the Triple Crown, and of course the meet coming up at Colonial.
And most of all, enjoy Bruno and the Preakness today.
absolutely. I hope you enjoy the Preakness wherever you will be spending it, and be sure to watch it on NBC 701. Preakness odds, by the way, let's kind of go over them. It's a little kind of crazy. With the scratch of First Mission, you would expect Mage, who was the morning line favorite by Keith Fustel, made 8-5 in the morning line. You would have thought his odds would have gone down, just the popularity of the horse. Actually, no. He's currently 2-1 in early wagering. So despite the scratch of First Mission, his odds actually went up. Second right now is National Treasure. That's the horse trained by Bob Baffert, who is back in Baltimore. Moving next, actually, is Blazing Sevens, who ironically drew the seven post with our Brad Ortiz, Chad Brown there, the Good Magic horse. Could have run in the Derby, has decided to run here. So Blazing Sevens, the seven horse, is currently the third choice at 9-2. You can see they're trying to, everyone's trying to be a wise guy to Mage, including perhaps even me. Red Route 1 is fourth. That was actually the first horse I saw when I stepped on the grounds here on Wednesday morning with Joel Rosario and Steve Asmussen. 10-1 in the morning line, 6-1, so getting a lot of respect. Some of the local horses getting some respect as well. Perform is 7-1. His odds have basically been cut in half from the morning line. Then you have Tom Rooney's Coffee with Chris. Yep, that's the same family that owns the Pittsburgh Steelers. Longshot actually raced at Colonial Downs early in his career, finishing 5th in the Hickory Tree last summer. That horse currently is 8-1, so not a single horse in the seven horse field it has odds in the double digits. So going to be a real competitive race when it goes off at 7:01. Joining us now on Off to the Races, let's get what is really apt intro music for our second guest this morning, and this of course is the King of Scat.
Are you hip to the jive? Are you hip to the jive?
And of course, this is Cab Calloway.
Do you lace your boots high?
A lot of people know Minnie the Moocher. I'm going to try and find some other Cab Calloway music through this segment. And joining us now from California, getting up really early on this Saturday morning, is Joshua Cabell Langsam, who is the grandson of Cab Calloway, and joining us from California this morning. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Thanks for waking up early, and thanks for the interview earlier in the week where we discussed your grandfather's interest in horse racing and his lifestyle. And the more research, I can see why it is somewhat addictive to you, because the more research you do, the more you want to look and find out just how interesting and compelling this figure in American arts history is. I mean, he's just a fascinating person to learn about. And it basically started right here in Baltimore, in Druid Hills, in the neighborhood of Druid Hill, where he used to ride the trolley to go to Pimlico.
That's right.
Maybe start there. Tell us just your memories of your grandfather and his connections to horse racing in the Preakness.
Sure. Yeah, I was very young when my grandfather was still around, and in the early 90s, in the late 80s, I would go to the racetrack with him. We lived in Delaware at that time, so Delaware Park would be his choice when he was down visiting us for the holidays. So I would go with him, and we would sit in the clubhouse, and people would come up to him for autographs and for pictures. And at the time, I didn't really know how significant Cab's history or cultural significance was. He was just my grandfather at that point. And he was a person of few words. We would drive out to the racetrack, and we would sit there for most of the races, and we'd leave before the last one, and wouldn't be talking that much. But he was a fan of the horses, and later in my life I learned more about that. And it did start in Baltimore, where he was earning extra money for his family as a child by going to Pimlico and walking the Hots after the races. And he developed a lifelong love for horses and the racetrack from, I think, that original experience.
It's really interesting because he shares so many of the same interests I have in horse racing and in basketball. But his basketball career sort of developed after his horse racing career, because he actually was an exercise rider, used to gallop horses until as a teenager, until he basically got too big, and then obviously the fortunes changed even on the basketball court. Tell us about his early life, not only on the racetrack but on the basketball court.
Yeah, so later in life, Cab recorded an interview where he said he actually galloped racehorses. And that was news to us because we just thought he had walked the Hots and sold the papers and kind of did sort of the odd jobs around the racetrack just to make some money. But it turns out that he was more involved than we thought. He's definitely said that he took out some racehorses for a spin on the track, and I guess that kind of sealed the deal for him with the adrenaline rush and, you know, getting first. And it has a lot to do with lineage and sort of, you know, breeding and training. And so a lot of these concepts that actually apply to his life. And yes, as you said, he was very involved in sports. And as a high schooler, he was a star basketball player at the Frederick Douglass High School, and he was a star guard, and he actually took that skill and applied it to a local team called the Baltimore Athenians, which was a Mid-Atlantic region Negro League basketball team. And he pretty much was a star at basketball, and that kind of translated to when he was in Chicago. He tried out for the Harlem Globetrotters, the new team at that time, run by Al Saperstein, and he made the team. So he actually made the original Harlem Globetrotters team, but eventually decided to stick to his main focus at that time, which was entertaining audiences, singing, and performing in clubs at Chicago.
He was actually so connected to Pimlico. His roots go so far back that there are excerpts where he talks about watching racing from Old Hilltop, which many who may not know, Pimlico is called Old Hilltop because there used to be an infield mound where people could watch races from the infield on a hill. That since right. has been leveled, but and that was a long time ago, but that's how far his roots go back. You mentioned the music. We mentioned Minnie the Moocher, the song, earlier in the interview. Let's hear an excerpt from the song where he actually talks about racing and racehorses.
He gave her his townhouse and his racing horses. Each meal she ate was a dozen courses. Had $1 million worth of nickels and dimes. She sat around and counted them all a million times. Heidi, 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 Heidi.
Yeah, and of course, Heidi, Heidi, Ho is his signature. But and so many nicknames he was called. That was something I wasn't aware of in preparing the article. You can read on the racingbiz.com the story there. But just a great ambassador for the game. It's in doing the interview, I'll try and not give away everything in the article, but he may have been the first headliner. We talked to Durrell Wood earlier in the show. Bruno Mars is playing there today. In 1962, the first headliner to play at the Preakness, as far as records can be told right now, was your grandfather. How about that?
That's correct. That was interesting to find out, and we have yet to really find any photographic evidence, but I would assume Kev would not be telling us something that wasn't in his memory, or maybe at least in his heart. He's definitely been at the Preakness many times, and he knew a bunch of people there, Chick Lang, and a bunch of other people in the racing business, and he used to hang out with the Whitneys and the Vanderbilts when he was up in Saratoga, and he's just very embedded in the culture of horse racing.
One feature in the article bringing up Chick Lang, Chick Lang basically was involved with integrating the jockey club at Hialeah Racetrack, and it involved your father, who was denied entry until Chick Lang basically threatened to pull Bill Hartack, a leading jockey nationally at the time, from riding there because of some of their practices and policies. Then you move forward, and at Belmont, at Delaware, that you mentioned earlier in the interview, there are now days. So it really came full circle for your grandfather, being banned from the jockey club earlier in his career, to later being recognized and perhaps doing more trophy presentations, maybe one of the more photographed and celebrated celebrities to visit racetracks.
It's really an amazing story. You know, he went from not being able to go into the turf club because of the color of his skin to having days at racetracks across the country celebrated in his honor. And yeah, it's a truly amazing story, and that's typical of Cab's other influences in life. He created spaces that didn't exist for and allowed more participation and people to be seen. And so Cab was really instrumental in creating a lot of those opportunities, and horse racing was no exception.
Yeah, that's just, it's wonderful, and it's great to recognize him on a big day here in Maryland. Even though he was born in Rochester, New York, Baltimore gets to claim a major portion of his legacy. So,
right.
Joshua, we appreciate you joining us on Off to the Races. Go ahead if you got something to add.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me, and hidey-ho Pimlico.
Yeah. The title of the article on the racingbiz.com. Yeah, thank you. Joshua Cabell Lawson, thanks for getting up with us so early, especially on the West Coast, to talk about Cab Calloway on this Preakness Day. And we'll send Cab Calloway segment out properly with a little bit of music other than Minnie the Moocher, very talented, as we go to break here on Off to the Races. When we come back, we'll speak with Frank Vespi, who was living the dream literally this week, and Derby Bill will go through the Preakness field in the anchor leg of the show. You're listening to Off to the Races. Here's a little bit of Cab Calloway going in the break.
Live racing at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races rolls on every Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern through March 1st, and every Thursday through Saturday through the month of October. Mark your calendars for Friday, August 25th, for the 15th renewals of the Grade 2 $1 million Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 $750,000 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest three-year-old filly sprint stakes race in North America. So come see us here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Learn more at Hollywood Casino Charlestown.
Living the dream on Off to the Races. I'm your host, Nick Hahn, up here in Baltimore for the 148th, I believe, running of the Preakness Stakes. And it's been a good week for racing up here at Pimlico. There have not been any incidents in terms of equine health, which is great to hear and great to see up here. It's certainly in the minds of many if you followed the coverage of leading up to the Kentucky Derby, and just been great racing up here, good results, thrilling finishes, good stretch duels, you name it. It's been a good week so far and should continue today. We're going to continue with Frank Vespi, who has had a very busy morning on this Preakness morning, doing media hits throughout. I've already seen him on TV here in Baltimore this morning on the Fox station, but he's joining us now on Off to the Races. Frank, happy Preakness Day.
Happy Preakness, Nick. Good to join you here on Off to the Races.
It's we saw some good racing this week. Good reporting coming out. Gary Quill doing a lot of good stuff on the racingbiz.com website. What have been your impressions and maybe some of the issues and thoughts that you have on this Preakness year?
Well, I guess I would start with, and you referenced this, a couple of really, really good races yesterday. In particular, I thought the performance by Taxed and the Black Eyed Susan was very impressive. And the Pimlico Special was a great race, you know, the head bobbing on the wire, no idea who won. And that was kind of neat because I asked Kenny McPeak, the trainer of the winner, Rattle and Roll, afterwards. You know, the Pimlico Special, a little bit like Pimlico itself, has really lost some luster over the last few years, but is a really important race historically. And I asked him, you know, if this meant anything to him or this is just another race at this point. And he said, no, man. He said, you know, I've seen so many great horses win this race, and so it means a lot to me to have my name there with those kind of horses and those kind of trainers. So so that was neat to hear. And then you and I have talked about this a little bit, Nick. We've got there's a lot of chatter here on the backside and the front side about the future. What happens with Pimlico? What happens with the Triple Crown? What happens with racing in Maryland? So there's been a lot of talk about that.
There have been a number of false starts associated with that, and it's pretty much encompassed every sort of scenario, whether it as a few years ago, there was talk of moving the Preakness to Laurel. There's been talk about keeping it here and redeveloping it. Nothing has really seemed to have physically changed. There's been some plans that have been put in place, but it does appear there's a lot of momentum these days that it will absolutely stay in Baltimore. It just doesn't seem like the Preakness would ever end up moving to Laurel or anywhere else. It's going to be anchored here as part of a redeveloped track and facility in Park Heights. I mean, is that's on the racingbiz.com. You've done some reporting on that news front. You know, tell us a little bit more about maybe as you see the future of the Preakness, maybe finally gaining some ground.
Well, let's certainly hope so, shall we? I think you summarized it there. I mean, I think, you know, there have been a lot of false starts on what's going to happen with the tracks in Maryland, what's going to happen with the Preakness. But I think what's become very clear over the last several years is the political momentum is behind Pimlico, and racing depends to a great extent on support from the state in terms of subsidies for purses from slot machines. It's going to have to depend on some state help to get new facilities built because they're just too expensive. And so if the political momentum is behind Pimlico, which it is, that means Pimlico probably survives. So probably you're going to see the middle jewel of the Triple Crown, the Preakness, stay right here in Baltimore, probably right here in Northwest Baltimore, sort of on this in this footprint that I'm standing in right now here at Pimlico. So that's what I think we're going to see. But I got to be honest, there's a long way from here to a new Pimlico and the Preakness taking place at a new Pimlico, and it's sometimes hard to see. It's hard to see the road as it sort of stretches out ahead of you, if you know what I mean.
The second oldest track in the country right now, only behind Saratoga, is Pimlico Racecourse. And you mentioned, you know, the history with the Pimlico Special. That's basically the race that came out of the Seabiscuit race with War Admiral. That's where the Preakness is going to be run. when it's going to be run might be happening a little sooner, perhaps. There are other issues, as we talked about in Maryland, but there, with Mage being the only Derby starter to run, and we kind of joked the other day during the alibi breakfast, there weren't any alibis because there weren't any Derby finishers other than Mage, and he was the winner. So, you know, that's a tradition that could be at risk. I don't think so. But, you know, tell us a little bit maybe about Mage and just the Triple Crown in general, and how it just works so much better. They need to run this race next weekend.
I you know, a lot of traditionalists have fought that, but I agree with you. I mean, I think, look, last year we didn't have the Derby winner. Rich Strike skipped the Preakness, ran in the Belmont, was nowhere. So that was disappointing. This year we have the Derby winner, but no other Derby horses. And I think, you know, I look, here's the thing, okay? 50 years ago when Secretariat won the Triple Crown, he won the Gotham. 2 weeks later, he won the Wood Memorial. 2 weeks later, he won the Kentucky Derby. 2 weeks later, he won the Preakness. That was how you handled good horses then. It's just not the way people handle good horses anymore. So you have to space the races in such a way that trainers, you know, are going to run in them and going to put their horses in them. And I think it's just sort of silly. Like, let's take the case of Mage. This is probably going to be the only time in his career that he runs on just 2 weeks rest. Why are you asking a horse to run in what, you know, will at this point be the second most important race he's ever run in, on rest that he has never had, you know, on a limited rest that he's never experienced before and never will experience again? It doesn't really make a lot of sense. Now, one of the things, and you alluded to this, Nick, is Maryland would have some work to do. If the series were to be stretched out, I believe, one, you'd really need a plan in place for a new Pimlico. This can't continue. Yep. This facility can't continue. And then the second thing is, you'd need a plan in place to bolster some of these undercard stakes. You need to get the Pimlico Special back to being a Grade 1. You need the Black Eyed Susan to bump up. You need the Dinner Party to get back to being a Grade 2 or a Grade 1. You've got to put some money behind these races and get them back to where they need to be. But right now you have a situation where, like, the universe of older turf horses that run at the Grade 1 level in that big, they're going to run in the Turf Classic at Churchill. They're not going to run back in 2 weeks at Pimlico, but they might in three or four. And so you've got to look at bolstering, stretching out the dates, bolstering the races, improving the facility. It's got to be a three-part solution here, not just one.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to look at it. I just think 3 weeks, it's not a substantial change. It's not going to be the death of the Triple Crown, as many naysayers as many traditionalists would have you believe. Let's talk about the Preakness, Field of Seven, with the scratch of First Mission. Chad Brown could have run Blazing Sevens in the Derby, but chose to run them here, something that he's done with many instances of success. Performs sort of an interesting, good-looking horse. We had Joshua Cabell Langsam on talking about his grandfather. Perform's grandfather looks a lot like Perform looks a lot like his grandfather Curlin when he was here on the grounds and won the Preakness. A local horse, Fergal Lynch. There, what are your angles on the Preakness? Who do you like?
Well, you know, Perform is an interesting horse. His connection supplemented him for $150,000 into this race, and as a general rule, you don't put that kind of coin on the table unless you like your chances of getting it back. And I thought his win in the Tessio was sneaky, really good, because he showed a nice turn of foot and a very kind of athletic ability to find a way through traffic, and that can be really useful. That said, I think the race, Mage is the best horse in the race, okay, period, end of that statement. That doesn't mean he's going to win. The pace scenario kind of sets up probably for National Treasure. He probably goes to the front, probably controls the pace. His nearest pursuer is going to be Coffee with Chris. Probably not good enough to go on. And then if he does, or if he really presses, then probably Mage wins. But you see, so you're kind of looking at who might jump up. I think Blazing Sevens, who you just mentioned, very interesting horse who could jump up here. He ran some really good races as a two-year-old. First start as a three-year-old was a mess. Came back, ran okay the next time out in the Bluegrass. I think he's probably sitting on a move forward. If he moves forward today, he's going to be right there. If it's, you know, not today, but in a few weeks, then he won't be there today. But I think he's a horse that you might get a little bit of a price on. And you know what? I'm going to have a couple bucks on the local Hopeful Coffee with Chris. The pace scenario works. He's going to be up close. There's only one other speed horse. He's probably not good enough, but should be getting a big number on him. And I want to be able to say, you know, say I not only rooted for it, but I cashed a ticket on it.
Yeah, but it's a stat I think I saw. I haven't seen this reported anywhere else, but I think it was on the Racing Biz staff where I saw with the scratch of First Mission, every horse in the race, and this is, I think, largely through Curlin, who has like four, is tied to four directly with Good Magic and Ride on Curlin with Coffee with Chris. But the three by Good Magic, one with Ride on Curlin, but every horse in the race here has a connection to Secretariat.
Oh, if somebody reported on the racingbiz.com, it wasn't me, so might have been you.
Okay.
But that is an interesting stat or fact, and you know, kind of neat on the 50th anniversary. And there's a little Secretariat Hall of Fame in the first floor of the grandstand here at Pimlico, and we've had the giant Secretariat statue on the grounds all week. So kind of neat that Big Red lives on through all of the horses running in today's Preakness.
That's they have the trophies from all the, including the Triple Crown trophy. All of those trophies are on display here, Pimlico, this week. So it's interesting. It's, if you're coming, if you happen to be coming up here, or know somebody it is, it's worth checking that out. I was able to walk through that earlier. What's it like there in the grandstand? I'm here in the lodging in the Hunt Valley at the moment. I'll see you in a couple hours. But what's the scene there at Pimlico as you're on the ground?
Well, you know, it's still it's kind of gray and overcast. There's a little misty this morning, kind of a wet mist when I went out at about 7 o'clock, and so we've, you know, weather's not bad, not perfect, but not bad. It's possible a little rain later, but we might be able to get all the races in prior to it. Hopefully we will. So that's not bad. And, you know, the people are filtering in, and we've already had a couple, I guess one race so far. The first race of the day was off at 10:30. And, you know, you'll see the crowd build and build through the day until the Preakness. So looking forward to that. You know, yesterday I saw a guy in a sparkly purple suit, which was phenomenal, and I'm hoping to see more of those. Plus, I'm sure we'll see a lot of people in either Black Eyed Susan outfits for the ladies or Maryland flag outfits for the gents. So looking forward to the Preakness scene.
Yep, as are we. Frank, thanks a lot. Marylander on his big day joining us here. Actually, I think bred New Jersey, but Marylander for a long time. Frank, thanks for joining us on Off to the Races. Good luck today, and we'll talk to you later today and, of course, next week on all the recaps.
All right. Happy Preakness. Good luck to you and to everybody listening.
Yeah, save me a crab cake. I think they start serving in about a half hour or so. Hopefully there'll be some left by the time I get through some of the traffic there. So Frank Vespi joining us on Off to the Races this morning. That means we're down to our anchor leg segment on Off to the Races. And, of course, that's Derby Bill. And there's no guesswork here on the theme music for Derby Bill this week. It's very obvious.
If you've never seen an Atlantic sunrise and the sunset over Isle of Wight, never crossed the Bay Bridge with the windows down, salt air blowing all around, never heard a ass woman or Susquehanna, got a melon tattoo with matching pajamas, let me shed a
and
little
of course,
light.
Derby Bill recognizes this as a Maryland thing.
It's a Maryland thing. You wouldn't understand. We can talk.
And He understands that. Derby Bill, let's see, who did I have in the first race here? I think I was on, I may have had Rock the Boat. Yeah, Robbie Bales. Yeah, did Robbie Bales win the first race today? I know you're watching. Derby Bill?
What?
There he is. He must be trying to get a bet in on one of the four account wagering services. Derby Bill, who won the first race today? Do you have it?
Yeah, Mike Barone and Horatio Karamanis and William Bales, the Colonial Connection on turf. You know, not hard to go wrong betting William Bales and Mr. Zappati. Rock the Boat won the first one, so don't rock the boat.
All right, that means I'm alive in the double.
Yeah, I know you're a Robbie Bales fan, so Rock the Boat on turf. He won by, I mean, he was way ahead. So, good day. Karamanis gets a win on the turf, which no shock to us.
We're going to go horse by horse here, but just in bringing up Robbie Bales, the we mentioned this a few shows back with the passing of Marshall Dow, the owner of Scrappy T, who had that legendary race with the Fleet Alex back in 2005. Spent a lot of time with Robbie and Marshall up here during that week in the lead up, and they ran such a big race and just sort of an awkward moment for them during after the race. So, and they both of them handled so professionally. It was just, it's hard not to think about that, even with Secretariat and all that. And of course, Robbie Bales is tied. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago. Wanted to mention that once again because we did lose a good one there with Marshall Dow. Derby Bill, let's go through the Preakness field. Let's start with National Treasure, 4-1 in the morning line. He's moved down a little bit. I think I saw 3-1 pull this up. Yep, 3-1 currently in the wagering. John Velasquez, Bob Baffert trains this horse. A Quality Road, who was a Virginia bred, is the sire of this horse. He was fourth in the Santa Anita Derby. How do you assess the chances of National Treasure today, the horse who drew the rail?
Well, he had blinkers, which is good if the veterinarian or HISA people are watching, because you know Bob Baffert's had some difficulties here, and it's good to see him back in the Triple Crown no matter what. He's definitely a part of the history of the Triple Crown, Mr. Baffert, and always dangerous. He don't ship a horse from California to Baltimore if he don't think he has a chance to win. So in a natural win with the scratch of First Mission, this gives him a better shot to wire the field from the inside post if he gets out Buddy Meister, Virginia bred style, and just goes for it. You know, he's got enough speed to get out, and the one's not as lethal with only seven horses like it normally is. If Pimlico had 12 or 13, I would worry more about getting pinched. But you know, with the tight turns and stuff, the one horse is an asset if you get out front. So really think he's got a shot there, Nick.
Yeah, actually, my pick for the race. I like National Treasure and Am Alive and the Black Eyed Susan Preakness double with National Treasure and Mage. So, yeah, I'd be happy if either one of those two win. In between those two is Chase the Chaos, who started out at 50-1 in the morning line, is currently 7-1. This is a horse that won an automatic bid to the Kentucky Derby. It's almost Rombauer-esque in the El Camino Real Derby out at Golden Gate, track that you know well from your travels in California. Sheldon Russell, a good friend of ours, super Sheldon Russell, leading rider at Colonial Downs several years, gets the mount here, not his first Preakness mount. What do you think about Chase the Chaos's chances?
Yeah, the Golden Gate thing is this change of surface there. I won on the Tapita or whatever surface out there, and this horse 7-1 is absolutely insane. You got to go to the Insanity Factory if you bet a horse at 7-1. I mean, this horse was 50-1. I have him at 100-1, and that was before the scratch of First Mission. So I have him at 99-1 now. He went from 100 to 1 to 99 to 1. Best thing is Sheldon Russell gets the mount locally, and the local jockey gets a, yeah, at least gets to ride in the Preakness, and the Connections get to have crab puffs in the suite, or if they have a suite at Pimlico.
Yeah, the infield tents.
Yeah, the tents inside are better than the grandstands for sure. Hopefully they work on that. But the California Derby ran eighth, and his only race on the dirt was seventh in the San Felipe. So, you know, chaos is, you know, and he's probably 9-5 to finish last.
Yeah, we used to do that pick a lot on the show. We'd pick the horse that finished last. The Mage is the Kentucky Derby winner, 8-5, sort of a surprising 2-1. Nobody wants to bet the chalk, I guess, in Maryland. That's not the thing to do. It's not a Maryland thing to bet the chalk. Javier Castellano, who we talked to last week on Off to the Races, is going to put the baseball mitt down and play some horse racing this week. What do you think of Mage's chances? He has just been full of himself, walking, yeah, almost Patio Prado-esque, walking to and from the racetrack today. He's been bouncing, rearing up, and that's been just his exuberance about being here in Baltimore with the weather and everything. What do you think about Mage?
Oh, he's not Secretariat, but he's definitely capable of winning this race if he runs his best. I mean, he's gonna have to run, you know, a good race, and that's why he's 8-5 instead of, he'll probably go off at 4-5. I'm not believing the early line or the early wager, and that's probably a lot of local wagering in when the national wagering hits the fan, so to speak. He'll go down to maybe even 3-5 by post time. He's at, the competition from the Derby didn't come, so, you know, everybody realizes nobody came from the Derby to try him again, and he ran well. Yeah, I mean, he had Forte beat in the Florida Derby. You know, if you look back, unfortunately, I didn't look back before the Derby enough, and a lot of people didn't, letting him go at 15-1 or 14-1 in the Derby. His horse ran, was beaten. Forte, as everybody knows, coming down a stretch at the Florida Derby. But, yeah, poo-pooed that. I'm not going to poo-poo him today. I think he's fully capable of getting us excited for the Belmont Triple Crown. And his odds were like, that's the best bet. If you're going to bet for Mage at all, you bet him to win the Triple Crown at 5 or 6 to 1 right now.
Yeah, that might be the angle there. Coffee with Chris is bred by Tom Rooney, who's part of the Pittsburgh Steelers family there, and not lightly raced by any means. Finished fifth in the Federico Tessio. This is a horse that finished also fifth in the Hickory Tree Stakes at Colonial Downs. Another long shot, currently the longest shot on the board at 8-1, Derby Bill.
Yeah, the story there is the Maryland bred. I mean, the Maryland bred hadn't won the Preakness since, what, 1986? With disputed testimony, was the last Maryland bred. So it's not been kind to the horses that eat crab cakes year-round and try to run the big Preakness race here. He'll be near the lead up front is the only best part about him. Is he, you know, he's ride on Curlin makes him up front. So he's going to run with National Treasure, try to get the lead at the beginning. But I can't see him I don't have him in my top four, so, you know, he's not in a battle with Chase the Chaos, which will finish last, but he's, you know, not going to finish in my top three, I don't think. Coffee with Chris, do you like him?
No, I don't. I'm pretty much steering away from the locals. I do like Perform a little bit. We'll get to him in a minute. Red Route 1, Steve Asmussen, this is a gun runner, is a horse coming in with a win at Oaklawn. Joel Rosario gets the mount on Red Route 1. I do like the gun runners, especially at Pimlico. But I saw this horse, just didn't have the appeal for me. Does he appeal to you?
I give him a chance. He's got a chance at the speed of National Treasure and Coffee with Chris push the pace like they did in the Derby and go, I mean, just gung-ho like they did in the Kentucky Derby. I don't see it as fast as that because the speed's not there. with National Treasure or Coffee with Chris. But Red Root won. He's ran in six graded stakes. So he's in the Oaklawn win in the bathhouse was very solid. He's definitely not a front runner. He'll be coming late, make one run. If Karamanis had him and it was on turf, I'd like him as an upset type selection. But I see him flying late, passing a couple horses and getting in your trifecta possibly.
Perform as a six horse. Fergal Lynch, who rides at Colonial all the time, gets the mount there for Shugmagehi. Shugmagehi bringing this Federico Tessio winner here. I think if there's a, and he's actually seen Mage before in a maiden special weight down at Gulfstream, where he ran somewhat evenly with him at until very late in the race, early back in January. How do you assess Perform's chances?
Yeah, he lost by about 5.5 to Mage back there back in January at Gulfstream Park on a real fast track. I mean, that track's lightning fast. I don't think Thunder goes quite as fast as that, although it is a fast track as long as we don't get rain by time. Fearful is how I pronounce the jockey's name in this race. Fearful. Just fear to the rest of the horses here. But the owners paid, what, $150,000 for him to race? So they know more than I do about racing, so you know you might want to put them in your superfecta or trifecta if we don't have a superfecta by post time.
To supplement, that's basically his career earnings. Blazing Sevens here in the last minutes of the show. Maybe give us your thoughts on Blazing Sevens and then give us your pick.
And that one's the one that'll tick off a bunch of historians because of Chad Brown targeting this race instead of the Derby. You skip the Derby and you race in this race. Clive competing won it and early voting won last year for Chad, and he's doing the same thing here, you know, shooting for the Preakness, the shorter distance and fresher legs, obviously.
How about your pick?
My pick is Mage. Mage and Red Root won in the exacta.
There you go. That's 3-5 for Derby Bill. Good luck, Derby Bill. Enjoy a crab cake and happy Preakness Day. And I want to thank everybody who was part of the show today. Daryl Wood, Joshua Cabell Langsam joined us from California. Frank Vespi joined us from Pimlico itself. And Derby Bill from there in Richmond. Next week, we'll recap the Preakness. We'll have your winner. We'll see if we have a Triple Crown chance. Another one, perhaps. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us on Off to the Races. Enjoy the Preakness post time next week for Off to the Races, 10 o'clock.